Van Morrison walking through the garden there on UNC Radio on Dave's Gone By. That's right, we are going into the garden courtesy of our guest, Carol Dimas. As I mentioned at the opening of the show, she was on Broadway in Grease. She was off Broadway in a little show called The Fantastics for a few years. She's also been doing a ton of cabaret, and former New Yorkers like me might remember her, well, certainly remember her, from a family TV show on WPIX way back when called The Magic Garden. So it is magical to have with us in the studio Carol Dimas. Carol, can you hear me?
Yes, I can. You sound a little away, but then you are.
Well, hold on. I got to get my headphones on. Try that again. Carol, I can hear you, definitely.
I hear you as if you were in Colorado and I'm in New York.
Okay, well, that's... it'll do.
You're a little far away and it's a little difficult to hear you. You're not immediately in my ear as though we were talking on the phone, but I can hear you across the room. You usually like it to be, or if there's something fouled up at your end?
Oh, there's always something fouled up at our end here at this station. It's college radio. You know, that's
Can't we ask the magic tree to bail us out? I guess not.
Well, I actually hear you absolutely fine. And I can see by our dials that our listeners do too. So welcome to the neighborhood. It's not quite a magic garden here. Things tend to die when I touch them. But other than that, it's fine. So how are you?
I'm fine, and I'm wildly busy, which is something I would never have expected at this point in my life, considering that the Magic Garden went on the air 40 years ago.
40? Was it 40? Oh, my God.
We will be celebrating the 40th birthday of the Magic Garden in 2012, and it happens to also be the 40th anniversary of Grease on Broadway, which is why 13 of us from the original cast are being assembled by Broadway Cares, and we start rehearsals tomorrow morning for a huge event in New York for Broadway Cares Equity Fights AIDS on Monday and Tuesday, which will be a part of the Gypsy of the Year, the annual Gypsy of the Year events.
Sure.
And this year they're kicking off the 40th year of Grease with a 7-minute number at the top of the show in which we are all taking part and singing snippets of the songs that we introduced when Grease opened.
Whoa.
So that's pretty exciting, and there are some amazing people in the Broadway world involved in presenting the Gypsy of the Year Awards and being the host. And Kim Cattrall will be on stage, Bernadette Peters, Daniel Radcliffe, Hugh Jackman, and Seth Rudetsky, who has a pretty well-known radio show about Broadway on Sirius Radio, is the host, as he has been in years past. And while we of the original Grease have an amazing friendship and very strong bonds that have remained over these 40 years, which isn't always the case with shows.
You know, oh, certainly.
You're close when you start, yeah. But then time goes on and people drift away from each other, which is natural, and that little family that you created when you were all in this together and didn't know where it was going sort of drifts apart, but that hasn't happened for us. So we'll all be together tomorrow, almost all of us except for the few of us who are no longer living.
Well, I know Kevin Conaway is gone, but was he in the Broadway or was he just in...
Jeff?
He was, yeah.
Jeff was the original understudy for all of the men, and when Barry went to do
Barry Bostwick.
A film, mm-hmm. Barry yeah. Bostwick, who was the original Danny, mm-hmm. went to do a film for a stretch of time. Jeff took over for him, so Jeff and I played opposite each other for a stretch, and that kind of opened up a whole new adventure in my life, and I spent 5 years living with Jeff. We were very close. And I had the honor and sadness of singing for his birthday memorial in October out in L.A.
Actually, wait, when you say you were you just sharing space because you were acting together, or were you a couple?
No, we loved each other very much. We were very close. We had a relationship that was very, very important part of my life. And I remained very close to his sisters, and love them still.
Sure.
So we're still kind of a family.
Was he...
I mean, I'm married almost 30 years happily now to Stuart Allen, who is an audio visual designer and was a Broadway designer, sound designer. So I'm lucky. Life has been good to me, and that my heart has found a place to go. But my relationship with Jeff was very intense and very deep, loving time for me.
I had no idea. There's none of that on the wiki or any of that anywhere. But were drugs a problem when you knew him?
Yes, I have to say. He fought it his whole life. I mean, they just were a magnet for him. He was a very sensitive, talented, beautiful, gentle, funny, dear man. But it was very tough for him to battle those demons, and he just, you know, eventually succumbed to a complication of many things, including pneumonia. But of course his body was kind of tired, and he'd had some serious back surgery.
Hmm.
We'd stayed in touch. I spoke to him not long before he died.
Wow. Did you ever, I'm sure you tried to help him. I mean, was it the drugs that drove you apart? Was it, or what was it?
It's interesting that this has come up.
Yeah, I had no idea this would come up. Yeah.
It's not something that's generally known, and not something I generally talk about. I mean, people in our close circle, of course, are well aware of our relationship. And when John Travolta had a memorial for Jeff not too long after he died, it was very private, and it was lovely in an intimate restaurant in Beverly Hills. And that gathering was mostly for people associated with the movie.
Hmm.
Johnny invited my husband Stuart and me to come and be a part of that, because it was also for family. And he considers me a part of the family.
Cool.
And he and Jeff and I were close, because when Johnny was very young and on Broadway in Over Here, his family lived in New Jersey and he lived with his family. But on matinee days, he didn't want to have to come from New Jersey, so he stayed with Jeff and me on Tuesday nights and Friday nights, and you know, we all shared a manager, so we were quite a group back in the day. And you had asked whether I tried to help. Well, of course I tried to help.
Well, yeah,
but you know, when someone is sharing himself with an addiction issue, as well as with the people who love him, it's not an easy situation. He was never a violent person. He was always gentle. I mean, he hurt himself the most. But there's a distance that happens. There's a separation that happens. And there's only so far you can go and so close you can get in those kinds of relationships. So but they very often can't last forever, and that was the case with us.
And you were smart enough not to be pulled into... I mean, was there ever a problem where you might have gone into the whole drug thing, or you tried it, you didn't like it, or you never even touched the stuff?
No. I think genetically, especially, I'm very blessed that I don't like that stuff. I can't say that I don't like a margarita now and then, you know.
Okay.
And I think red wine is one of God's great gifts to the universe. But I'm not a heavy drinker. I do like to drink socially. I have never liked drugs. I don't like the feeling of not being in control. I don't like where they take me. And I remember having friends in L.A. There were other people we shared our lives with who used to like to come, you know, and do whatever it was they were doing, and I just kind of stayed away from it and cooked dinner.
Well, okay,
but
yeah. Wow.
But they would say to me, you know, Carol, you're so lucky because you see and feel the things on your own that I feel like I need drugs to find.
Hmm.
And I thought that was an interesting question, and yet these people, these friends, were the most marvelous, creative, intelligent people. And I would say to them, but you can go there without hallucinating, without stuffing poisons into your body. I firmly believe in your talent and your creative brain and heart, and I think you really don't need this stuff to go there. You just think you do, but easy for me to say, right?
Right, I'm the same way. I mean, I grew up, I'm a total straight arrow. Never even tried drugs, honest to goodness. I grew up with some people who did and who dabbled and did some minor drug stuff. And I was like, well, you know, I can listen to music. You know, I've got other ways.
Right, right. There are so many things that can take you into the creative sphere and those parts of your brain and heart that open up and help you be closer to many of the wonderful things in life. And I just feel lucky that I never felt the need to put something into my body that would take me there. And on one or two occasions that are very vivid for me in my life, friends slipped stuff. This wasn't something friends should do.
Yeah.
But I suddenly felt awful. You know, I mean, my response to that was, don't stand there looking at me hoping that I'm suddenly going to join you in whatever joy it is that you feel when you do this, because that's not how I feel. And I think you thought you were doing something good for me and you knew that I wouldn't do it on my own, but this isn't working and now I have to, you know, wait until it ends.
Huh.
And I don't ever want to go here again.
Absolutely.
And so that was how it was for me. I'm having a conversation with you, a person I've never met in my life.
I know.
That I think I have almost never had with anyone.
And
entirely anyway.
I charge $95 an hour, by the way. You can make me
call
me Dr. Dave.
I think there may be some value maybe to the people who are listening to your show in my sharing this with you, because I guess what one of the things that's true of all of us is that most of us who are creative are curious.
Yeah.
And we don't tend to just wear blinders and just immediately assume that we know what's right and everybody else is wrong. I mean, if we don't reach out and try to expand our horizons and our minds, we limit ourselves, and especially for people in the creative arts, that's not a good thing to do. But I just feel like if we have gifts, if we have creative gifts, we are maybe capable of exploring so much just with the gifts we were given, and we don't necessarily need poisons to take us beyond the limitations of an ordinary day. I mean, if we can learn to be observant and of the world around us and sensitive to the people we're lucky enough to have in our lives, that just might do the trick.
Wow. We are talking with Carol Demas. I thought we would be talking about the Magic Garden and Broadway. And, well, we're talking about all this deep stuff.
Any
other confessions
people,
you need to get off your chest or anything? Or, you know?
Well, people still think, you know, that Paula and I must have been druggies back in the day in the Magic Garden, and that those big mushrooms that we sat on were symbolic of something, and they think that we were, you know, they think of us as those two hippie chicks.
Yep.
And,
hippie chicks and or lesbians, of which you
yes,
were neither.
Yes, of course. Paula and I have been friends since we were 14. And she is the best friend a person could ever, ever ask for. And she's just, we are still very close, and she's something in my life that's very precious, and I'm so grateful for her. and for her three children, and for, you know, everything that we have been through together. That friendship that people saw when they turned on the Magic Garden every day and sort of joined this circle of friendship that they felt a part of. And if you saw the letters that we get every day, still, from all of those children who couldn't write and there was no internet back when they were 3 and 4 and 5 and 8 and listening and watching us. Now they're between 30 and 45 and they write to us and tell us what we meant to them and how happy they are to find our DVD collection so they can share it with their children who they feared might be too jaded to love it the way they did, because children today have so much media to choose from. And boy, those people are thrilled to find that their children do love it. I mean, it's just simple classic stuff, but the friendship that they feel and the chemistry that they feel is absolutely real. Because by the time we got to the Magic Garden, we had been friends for, God, almost 20 years.
Wow. So was it the thing that you went to the TV station as a team and sort of approach someone for a show? Or how did the show happen?
Well, it was an insane time in my life, because when we were shooting it, I was playing Sandy in Grease, 8 shows a week, and shooting the Magic Garden on my one day off. But the station was looking for a way to satisfy the new children's television regulations. They were required as part of their license to supply a certain number of hours of educational television to their audience, and the Children's Television Act had everybody scrambling for programming. They had a whole lot of cartoons in their vault, and they wanted to find someone to be a kind of host for a cartoon show. So they were looking for somebody who had experience with children and a lot of children's and a lot of television experience, not necessarily children's television.
Uh-huh.
I have half a master's in early childhood education. I didn't imagine that I was going to bounce out of school and suddenly become the toast of Broadway. And I knew I'd have to support myself and my career. I got enough credits to pass a test and obtain license teach in the New York City school system. Paula now has the equivalent of a PhD in early childhood education, and she had done some folk singing. She was wonderful at it. She played the guitar. She had a wonderful voice. But the two of us ended up teaching together in a big kindergarten at PS7 in Brooklyn, which is in the public school system in New York.
Uh-huh.
It was a double enrollment kindergarten with 50 children in the room at once. And if you don't think that was wild. And a lot of them didn't speak English.
Oh,
they had
goodness.
Never had any previous schooling. So it was pretty challenging. And we were teaching together, and we reached them and began their education with music and storytelling and things that they hadn't really experienced before. So that was 10 years before the Magic Garden happened. When I went in to talk to WPIX about potentially hosting this show for them, and they told me what they wanted to do, I thought, my brain started, you know, going, and I thought, we could do something better than this. I asked them if they might be interested in a team. You know, I thought, well, you know, maybe they'd be open to discussing some other idea, and I told them about Paula, and I said, we have this teaching experience together. We have sung for the New York Shakespeare Festival together, which is another incredible story that I'm sure you don't have time for.
Oh, I wish I did. Yeah.
And, well, we could talk again sometime if you like. But anyway, I'd really like for you to meet her and think about the possibility of our doing a show together that might expand, you know, beyond the cartoon idea that you have. Not that your cartoons aren't charming, but, you know, maybe we could do a little something more. They said, like, what? Come in and show us. So we did. And I have to thank Paula for throwing that audition material together, because I was in the middle of 8 shows a week. I had no time to do it. And she did, and we went in, got on camera, did our thing, showed them, you know, a bit of the kind of thing we thought we could do. They got very excited about it. apparently interviewed a few more people, decided no one had our chemistry and they didn't really need to look further. And that's where the Magic Garden was born. Paula used to come to the theater where I was doing Grease on matinee days between shows with her baby at the time.
Oh, wow.
Her first one. She had two more after that. And she would bring me a sandwich or something, you know, so that I could eat something between shows. And we would go down into the depths of the theater and work on the show. The show was put together in an outline form by Virginia Martin, who was a station writer for WPIX,
mm-hmm.
and Alton Alexander, who was hired as a writer. But it was never totally scripted. All of the dialogue came from us, and we gave them lists of stories that we felt we could dramatize, bring to life, and songs that we knew we could do simple arrangements of with just two voices and a guitar live. Our voices had a great blend. That was just sheer luck, which we had discovered back in the kindergarten. So we would, you know, she would come and we'd figure out which story are we doing and who's going to play what and what props do we need and kind of, you know, work our way through it and work our way through simple arrangements for the songs we would be doing that week. And then we would sometimes participate, in fact, often participate in discussions of the scripts with the writers at the station and say, we like this idea, we're not sure about that one, how about this? But when we would do a show, it was one page.
Whoa.
And we had the wonderful Carrie Ann Teeby doing Sherlock and Flapper at the same time. And only once that I remember did he foul up and reverse their voices. He always remembered who was on what hand. He was so funny and dear and really a brilliant puppeteer.
Well, I used to watch
a good friend.
I used to watch The Patchwork Family and
yes,
Neville,
that was
Houston,
Carrie.
Rags and those characters, yeah.
Yes, yes, and these were not sophisticated puppets with eyelids that moved and stuff. You know, they were very simple. In fact, he made Sherlock out of a bathroom rug.
Oh, really?
Yes. He made him for the audition, because they wanted him to come in and audition, and he didn't have a puppet. So I think he might have had rags, but he didn't feel like that was appropriate, since this was something else.
Right.
So he made Sherlock out of a pink rug and half a rubber ball and pipe cleaners for his whiskers. And we thought, okay, now they loved him, now they'll make one that's, you know, a little less thrown together. That's what Carrie hoped. But no, you know, the budget was small, they liked him the way he was. And we were forever, you may have noticed, patting him on the cheek.
Yeah.
It was usually because we were sticking his whiskers back on.
Oh my gosh. Wow. How long was the Magic Garden on, team? How many shows did you end up doing?
We didn't make a whole lot of them. We made 52 of them. And we made an hour-long Christmas special, which Paula and I wrote and produced. And it ran for 12 and a half years.
Yeah. So
in cycles, you know, in 13-week cycles, the way shows often did at that time, so each show was shown 4 times a year, but there were a lot of them, and a lot of little children who watched it for a period of time, and then they would move on to something else, so it worked doing it that way. And actually, a lot of them watched until they were quite a bit older, which we didn't know, of course, until we started getting letters now, and some of them were girls who had crushes when they were 12, and they were still not really talking about watching it, but they were watching it. Children started watching about the time they were 2 and or 3, and continued to watch it into their early school days. Especially girls watched it longer. You know, boys
right.
would get into superheroes and stuff, but girls would be 8 or 9 and still watching it. And then we get letters from people who are now grandparents, who were the parents of those children. And according to the demographics at the time, there was a really unusually large number of adults who were watching with their kids.
Well, that, yeah, I mean, I have to say, just this morning, my wife and I were flipping channels, and we came across a children's show, and I'm not going to say anything disparaging about it. I mean, it is the culture now, the so-called Doogle Bops. Just came across it on one of those children's channels. And it's this perfectly fine, G-rated show for kids with a lot of music and a lot of color, but it moves so unbelievably fast. I mean, it's like cross-cutting, and every no shot lasts for more than like 2 seconds. And then it's all the music coming at you and stuff, and it's like, wow, if I were watching that 25 years ago, any child, our brains would have exploded, because it's just so much going wham at us. And it's nice to remember back when they would do a show, especially a children's show, and it was like, okay, camera, two shot, two girls singing for a minute or two or three, telling a story. It's okay. If you need to cut to the puppet, you do. There was a gentleness that is gone, you know?
Exactly. Exactly. There's a certain frantic quality that has entered children's television that we can't say we're real happy about. And actually, there are many educators who recognize this for quite a long while. They changed the format of Sesame Street to a certain degree because it was moving very quickly, and educators were complaining and saying kids are starting school expecting a teacher to be on a new topic every 3 minutes. It's, you know, we can't get them to focus, to concentrate on anything for a stretch of time. The Magic Garden took place in real time, and it was like a visit every day. There was enough going on so that it wasn't sleepy to the point where adults couldn't bear it, apparently. It was fun, and, you know, spontaneous things happened, which were fun. The music was absolutely live. The set was small, and we just moved from one area to another, and we had, you know, certain features every day that children looked forward to seeing. But there was something about the reality of it and the classic quality of it that makes it still interesting for children today, and we've had some educators look at it in recent times to tell us what they think about it, and they say they think that it's actually totally viable.
Oh, yeah.
And valuable still. There are a few things that are dated. You know, some of the people who are spoken about in various professions tend to be male, you know, that kind of thing. But all in all, when little children watch this show today, they can't get enough of it. We have the DVD collection, which, if you don't mind, I will say is available on the shop page at carolandpaula.com.
Carol, A-N-D?
And Paul. A-N-D, have to spell, and Carol has an E.
Oh, C-A, right, your name, C-A-R-O-L-E.
R-O-L-E.
A-N-D, Paula.
A-N-D, P-A-U-L-A.
.com.
Right.
So that's for the DVD.
And we have a shop page, and you can, and we chose 10 of our favorite programs, and they are in this DVD collection, along with a nice little booklet that has pictures and stuff. And there's a CD sampler in there with materials from all three of our CDs as well. And so people buy this. They say, well, I bought it for myself, but I thought maybe my kids might like it. I had hopes, but I was thinking, well, maybe, you know, what I used to like, it's like, oh, Mom, you know. But they do like it.
Right.
The children do like it, and they can't get enough of it. We started writing a show, a new show, that was an arts education show called Friends Forever. And we based it on a very solid arts education curriculum. And we were ourselves again, only years later, and we just focused on music and drama and art, and we had puppet characters who were very much like Sherlock. In fact, we kind of wrote it in a way that they were Sherlock's relatives.
Okay.
And it may sound like we never had another good idea, so we just did it all over again, but not really. I mean, we expanded what we were able to do in the Magic Garden enormously, and there was some serious interest in it. But like many things, you know, it's showbiz and stuff happens. When we thought we almost had sold it to Sony Family, and the two people who we went out to meet with were two young women who were producers there and wanted to do a new children's show, and contacted us and said, would you two by any chance be interested in getting back into children's television? Because they had both watched the show when they were kids. And we said, not only that, but we have a show. We have drawings, we have scripts, we have, you know, curriculum. We've come and show us. So we did. And they were just exploding with excitement when we were done, clutching this prototype that we had brought them and saying, oh, this is the best thing anyone has sent us. We're really interested. We'll get back to you. And then we get back home, and a few weeks later, their legal department called. Who do we talk to about a deal? And we thought, jumping up and down. But one of them got moved up into adult television. The other one got married. A new boss came in to that department. It slid to the bottom of the pile. And that wasn't the only place we had brought it. What it showed us was that it was good.
Right.
Or we would not have been met with that level of interest. You know, it's an exhausting, full-time, difficult process to try and make something like this happen. And we just, and it just hasn't.
So are you still sort of trying? This was a fairly recent experience then.
Not real recent. Oh, okay. I mean, we started working on this 10 years ago. Mm. And off and on, we've been busy with it. And, you know, we have busy lives. We're older now. I have a website of my own now, caroldemus.com, on which you can see all the insanity that I'm up to, because I've reached a point in my life where I feel like it's use it or lose it time. If I don't keep singing,
right,
then I won't.
I hate to rush, but we kind of have, unfortunately, I have to wrap this up. We're definitely invited for a part two, because we didn't even go anywhere near half the things I wanted to talk about yet. But I want to make sure that you're able to push, like, your current appearances, your website, and you're doing cabaret at, like, the Laurie Beachman. So where can people see you in New York, like, in the very near future?
Well, certainly, of course, Monday and Tuesday at the Gypsy of the Year, at the New Amsterdam Theater, the Gypsy of the Year events, which are big, amazing shows with all the great singers and dancers on Broadway doing various numbers, and starting with most of the original cast of Grease doing a big number in tribute to the iconic show that Grease has become over the years. And because we were young when we started, you know, we were mostly in our 60s. I'm a little older than that. And we are, you know, still kicking.
Right.
And most of us, thank God, still living and well, so we are able to do this, which is very exciting. Then on Wednesday night, I will be at the Players Club in New York, which is a prestigious and wonderful place and organization, as the featured vocalist with Sean Harkness, an outstanding guitarist who's doing a show of his own, and asked me if I would join him, along with Ian Herman, who is my musical director and will be playing something of his own. And then on Saturday the 10th, mm-hmm, I will be at the Irvington Town Hall Theater, which is a lovely old theater in Westchester County, patterned after the theater where Booth shot Lincoln.
Oh, lovely, okay.
But it's actually a wonderful theater, and I'll be there with Rob Evan, who's a big Broadway star.
From Jekyll and Hyde, I think. Yeah.
Pardon?
Wasn't he in Jekyll and Hyde?
Yes.
Yeah.
And Rita Harvey, who has had a great career, and her husband Neil Berg, who has a troupe of Broadway people, and he goes about the country. He's probably been in Colorado with Neil Berg's 100 years
of Broadway.
Broadway.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then Thursday, the 15th of December, I'll be at the White Plains Performing Arts Center with a program of holiday songs of the season, directed by Phil Jeffrey Bond. We will be mostly Broadway and cabaret people. I would like to say hello, if I could, before I leave you, to my relatives in Colorado, to my uncle, Dr. Tom Steinberg in Vail, and to Chris
Steinberg. I knew you were Jewish. I had this feeling when you said thank God before, and then you said holiday show rather than Christmas show. I was like, you're Jewish, aren't you? Are you Jewish?
No.
You're not? Oh.
Oh, no.
You're just being
politically
correct. Oh, wow. Okay.
Paula is. I am not.
Oh. Oh, well. My mistake. You're welcome in the neighborhood
My
anyway.
My husband is.
Oh, well, there you go. No, so you're, oh, okay. You're Jewish by association.
So, and I grew up in Brooklyn, which makes you about as Jewish as you can get without actually being Jewish.
Well.
Especially at the time that I grew up there.
Well.
And I adore my husband's family, and they live in Israel, and they have adopted me quite fully, so I'm grateful for that.
Mazel.
I have my cousin Eric and his wife Kathy Steinberg in Steamboat Springs, and Dr. Chris Steinberg, my cousin, in Alamosa. And, you know, I recently did a show of my own. I called it Summer Nights at the Laurie Beachman Theater last year and this past year.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the people who sang with me was Josh Franklin. He sang Danny with me, and we did the Summer Nights number. It was such great fun. He was the last Danny on Broadway in the last revival. He played it toward the end. And Josh is from Colorado. I think he's from the Denver area, and I know he's gone out there to sing. And we talked about it. I said, God, I would love nothing better than to bring my show to Colorado and do it.
Colorado?
Because I adore Colorado. My husband and I were there 2 years ago, gone to see my uncle, and he was my husband was in Denver at a trade show, and we took off from there. He had never gone through Rocky Mountain National Park.
Oh, wow.
I said, you have to see this. My father brought us all out there when we were kids. You know, we went on motor trips. My sister and two brothers and my parents, they would put us in the car and just drive us to see this country. My father, who had been in World War II and seen a lot of Europe, and he was in the OSS, he saw a lot of Europe and Asia. He said, people don't remember how beautiful this country is when they think about wanting to travel afar. And he said, I want you to see the Rockies, and I want you to see Colorado and Wyoming and the beautiful places out there. So it has been a very special place to me. It was so exciting for me to have my husband see the park. And the first time I ever traveled through it, coming from west to east instead of east to west.
Yeah.
When you're on the outside of the road, looking over.
Carol, I hate to do this, but I actually have my next guest calling in, and we've run a bit over time. So it's been fabulous, and it's wonderful that there's so many ways to come and see Carol Demas. She's in Gypsy of the Year. You'll be doing your show in Irvington and all around. And just go to her website, caroldemas.com, caroledemas.com. Carol, consider this an invitation to come on back very, very soon to the neighborhood to tell us part two of your life and work. It's been an absolute magical experience having you in the neighborhood. Thank you so much.
I enjoyed talking to you so much, and as you see, I'm a talker. Press the button and I go.
Well, that's what we need on the radio, but not right this moment. So,
no dead air. Have a good day.
You too.
Enjoy your next guest, and we'll talk again.
You betcha. Bye-bye.
Thank you.